Welcome to Green Hack Scandinavia. In this episode, I have invited the sustainability advisor, Mattias Goldman. We will talk about our future, what we need to do to reach the climate targets based on what was said during COP26. And we will also look ahead on trends and how our everyday life could look like year 2045, when Sweden is a climate neutral country. Hi and welcome, Mattias.
Thank you, Pernilla, for letting me be part of this great pod. And thank you for that introduction. I loved how you said that when we're climate neutral in 2045 and not if. It's a when.
Yes, it is. Must be.
Yes.
You have extensive experience from working with Sustainability Matters. Until recently as the Chief Sustainability Officer at the consultancy firm Sweco. And now you're working as a Senior Sustainability Advisor living in Thailand. Based on your experience and knowledge working with the climate impact and making a difference, what would you say are the keys on how to make a difference?
I'm so glad that we immediately focus on this difference making that I hope we'll be able to develop together. And I actually just came, we're 6 hours ahead here in Thailand, so it's evening here when we speak. And I just came from a theater practice where we're practicing Dante's Divina Commedia. Which, like many classical plays, is about how we as humans cannot really change anything. Everything is faith, and we are very tiny in God's or someone else's big creation. And that is now very different. I love to compare where we are now to where we were just recently. And now it is really us. You and I, those listening, the politicians that we elect, the leaders of the companies, which products we choose to buy or not, and where we work or choose not to work. It's us that change and decide the future for actually all humankind and all beings on this planet, which gives us a tremendous opportunity to be able to say, well, that was us that fixed it. The 2045 target that you already mentioned for Sweden, similar targets around the world, and the Paris Agreement when we talk on what we reached, an agreement on a global scale. And how to get there, that's something that we need at least a full podcast to discuss. But certainly, I am not convinced that today's focus on guilt and shame and panic is the only way forward.
So guilt is not the way forward. Why not? I mean, we have something called flygskam in Sweden that is based on guilt of going with an airplane, traveling with an airplane somewhere and feeling a bit ashamed of that since it contributes to your emission. Why is that not a good thing?
I am convinced that it is a good thing to focus on guilt and shame for some of us. I am a great admirer of Greta Thunberg, Fridays for Future, and the whole movement that says that very many things of what we did yesterday are simply not acceptable tomorrow. But I also, as a middle-aged man nowadays, realize that those that need to change the most might not be the ones that are the most easily reached when you say shame on you. Because behavioral psychologists are very clear in the research that they do that when we name and shame, we also force people into defending that behavior that they could just have changed if given the right incentives, or that they would just have changed anyway, because tomorrow, if a Hummer was cool yesterday, a Tesla is cool tomorrow. So that change is going to happen for all different reasons than the ones that you and I might focus the most on. But because we shame or guilt, we force them into defending and keeping the behavior that we need them to move out from. And I speak from own experience. I think that many of us can relate to sometimes when we've been accused of doing something that we really probably felt we shouldn't do, and then we find ourselves starting to defend that behavior. And it's a good thing that you brought up that I'm living in Thailand now. We tried to take the train here. All the borders were closed, so we had to fly here. And I'm never going to defend flying to Thailand, but I am going to defend the right for people to decide upon their own lives. And I want us to make sure that decision on their own lives, not least focusing on where I am now, in Thailand, which is more typical for the world than Sweden is. That decision should not be somebody else's, and it should not be that you have to give up your lifestyle to save the planet, because most people will not be ready to give up their lifestyle. So if we are serious, not about winning the argument or being the most popular, but really winning the fight against climate change, we must find ways that attract also the middle-aged men and also attract those that have fought very hard for the lifestyle that they live now and would not be prepared to give that up.
What will you be your secret recipe, so your secret weapon to motivate people instead of shaming, instead of guilt?
You know, it's not a secret weapon at all, because everybody who's been studying marketing, or everybody who's even opened a newspaper or flipped through the TV channels trying to avoid the commercials, have realized what commercials all try to do when they want to sell us either a product or an opinion or a service. They all show how we benefit ourselves from buying that product, buying that service, voting for that party. It's only us in the climate movement that believe that by shaming, we would reach the benefit that we want. Or by saying, well, you should think more about the polar bears, or you should do this for your great, 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 great grandchildren. It's no wonder that those that are commercially successful in making us buy their products do not use that kind of argument. So learning from them, we need to understand what's in it for me. And a survey that I love the most, thinking about how this is not just a Swedish podcast, but a Nordic podcast, right? There was a great survey in Copenhagen. Copenhagen is the number one city in the world when it comes to share of population biking every day to and from work, to and from school, and so forth. And they asked the Copenhageners, "Hvorfor cykler du egentlig? Why do you take the bike?" And the Copenhageners were allowed to give three answers. It was multiple answer. And top three were, "I do it because I save time. It's faster than taking the car because the car is so much hassle to park. I do it because I save money. It's cheaper than going by public transport because you need to pay the monthly fee for that. And I do it to get my daily exercise. I don't have to go to the gym, which I find boring, because I bike every day." They all got more than 80%, and dead last out of all the different options you could choose, with only 7%, was "I do it for the climate." So, and I know that very often, perhaps many of us listening to this pod, and very often in my own friendship, I'm surrounded by people who are as climate geeks as I am. But we're not the target here. The targets are those that have not yet been convinced, that have not yet changed their behavior. And to shame them or to guilt fill them will not make the difference that we need. Because remember that we need to reduce emissions very much, very fast. Very many have to be part of the equation.
Exactly. So everyone has a responsibility in this, right? You even wrote a book called Climate Sin. We explain how sins can save the climate. And you mentioned even the seven death sins. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, correct. Because when you say that everybody has a responsibility, I start thinking, when I tell perhaps my teenage daughter previously, or someone that I might know, that you have a responsibility to do this, I think that many of us try to avoid the responsibility. So what I want us to do is to focus less on what we have to do and more on what we want to do. So the seven deadly sins was, I found, a nice approach. For thousands of years, and in many different religions and cultures, we've been told that these are the sins that we should never commit. We should not be envious of others. We should not be driven by greed, and so forth. And it's also a good explanation of how we humans are, in fact, when we think that nobody's watching, how we in fact behave when we are typically ourselves. So I tried to turn that around and say, well, what happens if we systematically commit all these sins for the sake of a better climate? And it really works quite well. One of the nicest of the deadly sins is laziness. And I loved how carpooling or car sharing schemes used that to their advantage. In the early days of car sharing or carpooling, they would say, help save the planet, join a car sharing scheme. And technically it makes sense because an average car is unused 96% of the time. So there's a great climate benefit if we share instead of each and every one of us owning our own. But very few of us were attracted by this message of saving the planet. It was too far from our daily go-abouts. And then they changed the message to a car only when you want it. And if you're part of a car sharing or carpool, you don't need to worry about servicing the car, paying the annual tax, washing it, changing to summer tires, changing back to winter tires, finding long-term parking when you're not using it, paying the insurance, all of that is taken care of. And that, with all the busy lives that I see that so many of my friends and all of us have, it is a great way to move forward, showing how laziness is aligned with the climate solutions that we need. Another one that is perhaps more ugly is greed. A lot of us would admit to being lazy. Even in fact, if we're not, it's a nice thing to say, I'm a bit of a lazy person. And many people would say, no, Matthias, you're not. But I like to pretend I am. But few of us would admit that we're greedy, right? I'm disgusted with myself when I'm greedy. And it's not something that anybody wants to be, but we are. And recently, there's been a big change where greed before was the enemy of climate and environmental solutions. Some of us said that we have to give up market economy, we have to give up quarter reportings, we have to have less or maybe even no economic growth at all. Now, perhaps the greediest person on this planet, the CEO, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, the largest institutional investor in the world, has said that he's moving, and he is moving, all their money, which is more money than Sweden has, all their money from fossil to renewable, from linear to circular, from inefficient to efficient. And it's not because he woke up a climate evangelist. It's because he started realizing, well, what happens with all my investments in coal and oil? If the world means only half of what is in the Paris agreements, these investments are going to be sunk or stranded or not worth very much. So just to safeguard my investments, just because of greed, he's now investing hugely in renewable, circular, and efficient. So greed now works with us. And you find that for each of the seven deadly sins. The chapter about lust is censored. but it works with lust as well, let me tell you that.
Okay, interesting. I need to read the book now.
Yes.
How else can consumers and citizens be nudged to make a difference? I'm thinking both at home, at work, to make your voice heard.
I think I love nudging. I just posted on my Instagram a staircase where each stair had the inscription of how many calories you saved by taking the stairs instead of taking the elevator. And I think that made many people realize, well, this is part of my well-being right now, not just global well-being for the future. And making sure that these issues are closer to heart and closer to wallet also is something where we can all be part of the message. I think that nudging, even though it's great, is often my third priority. First, if possible, I want to get the legislation right. I want the really bad things to be just outlawed. And the good things, that's my second priority. I want the good things to be worthwhile economically. And then thirdly, if we feel that we can't influence that, well, then at least we can nudge. And that nudging is happening all the time. You started out with the discussion about shaming for flying. We see that strongly as a nudge now, that when people post a picture from their faraway trips, there's much less likes, thumbs up on Facebook than before. And that in itself is a message. And when people tell about or boast, I much prefer boasting than shaming. When people boast about their great train trips through Europe, and we give the thumbs up, or we're the ones telling about it and spending some time in detail explaining how you take the train for Europe, because it's still not all that easy. That is also a great part of nudging. And I think you're right, Pernilla, in posting that question, because we are all influencers in our surroundings. Some of us might have a bigger following than others, but we all have a dinner table with friends and family where we can bring things up. We have either a business or university or school surroundings where we can raise issues. And the research that I've seen is that it really doesn't take all that many to change things. For instance, if there's only one vegan or vegetarian in a group of 8 to 10 people, very often that only person will be the one deciding where to go and where not to go to eat. Because most people don't really care one way or the other. So if you've got a strong opinion and are prepared to show it, and hopefully make it a nice one, not guilt-ridden, but a nice proposal for friends, family, colleagues, and politicians, that's the way forward.
There are sustainable choices everywhere, right? So if we have two different choices, And the second choice is more sustainable. Do you think that this option also needs to be even cheaper or more convenient or something else for us to actually choose it?
Yes, I do. I think that not enough of us will consistently choose the better option if it means that we don't have money enough to buy the football shoes for my daughter that I wanted, or to have the kind of dinner that we hoped for, so forth. If it means sacrificing, it's not going to be good enough. But that's also part of nudging. Many people say we have to change our ways of life, for instance. And my way of life might be, if I live in Stockholm, to visit my brother who lives in Gothenburg and to be able to go there for the weekend. But it's not a way of life to insist on flying there. It doesn't make one a difference at all. And if we can be fill the story about the train ride to Gothenburg with a much nicer experience. You're able to sit in the restaurant, you're able to work seamlessly, and you go from city center to city center. All of these advantages are often there, but a lot of us focus on, because we've been taught that we should, it's a Lutheran part of the world that we're discussing now. We've been taught that we should suffer, that the good things come with suffering, and the environmental movement has been especially strong in focusing on this suffering.
So it's also about finding these other arguments then to boost the other option that is actually more climate friendly.
Very much so. And also about, I think that none of us, including myself, have reached the climate targets that we want to, because some parts are simply not there whether we want it or not. And even before you take your first step out of bed in the morning, you're already unsustainable in terms of climate, just because of the surroundings that the state, the city, and others have given us. We should be better at finding what's great, and also about not starting with those things that suffer, that make us suffer. For many of us, it will be a very tiny step to, for instance, go vegetarian. And several of the big burger companies have proven that most of us can't even taste the difference between the vegetarian and the meat option. So there's really no point in taking the high climate alternative there. But for some people, for some reason, I don't understand it, but I respect it. For some reason, it's super important to have that meat. All right, then start with something else. For me, I don't understand how anybody can want to fly domestically in any Nordic country. because trains are so well built out, it's such a nicer experience and so forth. But if it's important for someone, it might be because you live in Boden and you have small kids and you really need to be home for dinner after a meeting in Stockholm. Okay, fine, then don't start there. So I really want us to throw Luther away, even though I focus on climate sinning, and make a list. What would be really beneficial to you? What would hurt just a little bit? And what would be more pain than gain? Then skip that for the time being.
Really good tips. But don't you think that a lot of actions also has to do with habits that you're just used to doing things? And it takes a bit of energy to start doing it differently.
Oh, yeah. I am discussing with my dad now which car he's going to buy next time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that what he chooses perhaps not to buy is partially based on what one knows well and partially based on hearsay, which might be years old. So, of course, we are creatures of habits. It's hard to break a habit, and it becomes harder the older you get. And it's for some reason harder for men than women, which means that those that have a high climate impact are also the ones that we need to convince the most in finding new solutions. But sometimes it's exciting how quickly that can go. For instance, when I know I mentioned Tesla already, so stop me if this gets boring, but when Tesla came out, the number one trade-in car in the US was a Hummer. So from a super big, gas-guzzling, unsustainable car, they switched directly to the Tesla because one thing was cool yesterday and one thing is deemed perhaps cool tomorrow. So sometimes we can take huge leaps. Even people who are fairly non-committed to climate and might be fairly conservative are ready to take those huge leaps. And God knows that we need to take some really big steps now to combat climate.
This was part one out of two episodes featuring Mattias Goldman. He will be back in the next episode where I will ask him what the biggest trends are within the sustainability area and what he thinks is the three biggest takeaways from COP26. If you like this episode, support us by leaving a rating and subscribe to get notified when the next episode is released. Thank you for listening to Green Hack Scandinavia, and remember, conscious choices are everywhere.